Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
You're on 101.9 Hi FM. Thanks for joining us. This is Saul Rosenberg. You are on the People in Perspective show, and every week we look at people and HR issues, specifically in the workplace. We look at relations between people, between employers and employees, between employees and employees. And basically, we are sort of trying to give people a bit of insight into the employment landscape that South Africa sort of has, and in general, a bit of guidance on that. So in studio, we have our labor law expert, Michael Bagram. Hello, Michael.
Hi, thank you for having me on air. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us. It's nice to have you back again. Michael, this week we've got a very much a labor law focus, and we just had Peter Fine on, and we were talking about medical testing and the labor legislation that governs those areas. But what I'd like to talk to you about is this age-old sort of conversation about contractor versus employee, because it comes up again and again, over and over again. And I'd actually like to update our listeners. I'm sure listeners out there who are interested to know, since COVID and all of that has now kind of fallen past, and we've moved into a new era, basically with AI as our latest challenge in the labor in the workplace. You know, the risks and the benefits. Has anything changed in the last 5 years with regards to the rights and obligations that employees and contractors would have?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, it's become more blurry. So when you say change, it's actually become a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
Let me give you a little example. A couple of years back, in fact, just before COVID, I appeared in the Labor Court and in front of one of the Labor Court judges. And I was arguing that the individual, I was representing the employer, the company, and I was arguing that they weren't the employer. In fact, they had contracted with the individual as an independent contractor.
Yeah.
And that it was not an employee and therefore did not have the rights as outlined in the Labor Relations Act and the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. And of course, it was very blurry because the individual was saying, well, I'm part of the organogram. I get a pay slip, I've got a business card, I'm an employee, and therefore I've got all the rights. And I was explaining with the contract itself said that you were an independent contractor,
right,
and that you sent in an invoice each time to be paid each month. So I was saying the paperwork shows that, in fact, you're an independent contractor. And I remember at the time it was Judge Wangley, I think it was, who said to me, well, Mr. Bagram, you're trying to describe something to me in terms of your paperwork, but pretend I'm a Martian flying overhead and I have a look at this scenario of what I see in front of me, and this looks very much like an employment contract. So you can call him whatever you want to call him. I'm telling you he's an employee. So at that stage, I then got bumped very heavily. We then had to go into the next stage of the court case, but it showed to me that this is getting more and more complicated as we go on, because there are two sections in our labor law. There's a section in the Labor Relations Act, which describes the tests for whether a person's an employee or not, and there's a section in the Basic Conditions of Employment Act that also does a similar sort of definition. Of course, it boils down to the real facts of that particular, and it's very difficult even for someone who's an expert in labor law to come forward and say, this is definitely an employee or this is definitely an independent contractor. So you've got to be very careful as to how you do it and don't blur the edges by putting a person, when you have an organogram, for instance, of the company, you put that person in. Obviously, there's certain obvious examples. For instance, I call a plumber because my tap is dripping.
Yeah.
And I call a plumber in and I say, can you please help me? My tap's been dripping the whole day and I need someone to sort this out. He says, sure, I'll send someone in. And that person arrives. That's clearly not an employee of mine. Obviously not. But if a person stops on the side of the road and says, I can fix your garden wall, it seems to be collapsing, And I say, sure, how long do you think it'll take? He says, oh, it'll take a week or so. And I get him working here at my garden wall, and I have got no contract. I've got him working, and I'm going to be paying him. He say, what is that? Is that an employee or independent contractor?
Right.
And that becomes very blurred, very blurred, because he can argue.
So I think there must be lots of people listening now at the moment who've had some circumstance in their life, possibly in the last 6 months, where they've had a situation where either they or the employer were not actually sure about whether they were an employee or a contractor. And often people are the problem is when people then go into where they don't know, they then sort of go into a situation where they just sign and nobody actually knows the situation, and it needs to be straightened out at a later time. If you've got an interest in this, and you're welcome to send in your name and contact us. It's 061-685-1019. Just send us a WhatsApp message and tell us what's been happening. Maybe we can help you. We'd love to hear from you, Michael. So, the positive thing I'm hearing from you is that there actually is a way, to make sure that you as a layman, or even as somebody who's got a bit of understanding about law, there actually are ways for you to discern whether somebody's an employee or whether somebody isn't. That's the benefit that our laws now makes quite clear, as Michael's been saying to us. But further on, just to move it on to another question, is that, in terms of the benefits and the risks that we have now in 2024, often I find now in the workplace, if people are then put in a situation where they are asked, would you like to be a contractor or would you like to be an employee? This is now a question of saying, well, are people actually given that choice anymore, or actually are most people now becoming contractors anyway?
No, they do give choice. In fact, what I do with my clients is that I actually say, you must actually get involved in a discussion with that person as to what they want to be, first of all. Or if you're only offering as an independent contractor, you must say that I'm not offering you a job as an employee, and I need you to put it in the contract itself that you decided you wanted to be an independent contractor. You will submit your own income tax returns. You will submit an invoice, and you will not be part of the operation of the business. And you actually make it 100% clear, not only in the contract, but in your behavior and your engagement with that individual, that they are not an employment contract. Now, things get a little bit more confusing when a person is earning under the threshold. In other words, they're earning under 21,000 Rand per month. The Department of Employment and Labor sets a threshold. That threshold gives that employee a little bit, under the threshold gives you a little bit more power. So first of all, say that I'm an employee, and second of all, to say I'm permanent. Even if you employ someone on a three-month contract and that person's earning under the threshold, and that contract is indeed a post, which is a permanent post, but you've decided to put them on a three-month contract, that contract is deemed null and void. And it's deemed to be a contract that is not written. And so much so that thousands and thousands of South Africans believe that they are on short-term contracts, whether they're employees or independent contractors, but in fact they're permanently employed. There was a Supreme Court of Appeal case on this, and it actually went to the Constitutional Court, and the Constitutional Court has underwritten that, and it's making the situation more and more difficult for people who engage with workers as to whether they can call them independent contractors or employees. So you've got to be very careful the way you structure this and the way you deal with it.
So I think the more people know in terms of what the law is allowing you to do, the better. I think the problem is that people have a lot of great business ideas, and generally the most time and effort and energy is spent protecting themselves and their employees. And you know, when it comes to you know, their contract, and often it's just an informal. So it could be an informal sort of contract, and they don't pay enough attention to what's actually in the contract. They just want to have some kind of an understanding between themselves, and it can become very costly, as I understand, Michael.
And time-consuming, and a lot of heartache, because these disputes do become very, very unpleasant. I know that I sit in those disputes every day. That's my daily bread. I go to the CCMA and the Labour Court often. And I must tell you, a lot of people land up fighting when the intention was nothing what they're now claiming to be. And the problem that we've got is that there might be a meeting of minds at the time, but when there's a divorce, then that's not so kosher anymore. So the reality is that's why you sign an ANC contract before you get married, because who knows what happens 20 years down the line. Precisely. When you're not so much in love anymore, and now you've got a document that at least controls that. And that's what happens with employment. It's far more often and far quicker than divorces, I can promise you that. The CCMA today, and I sat in a debate with the CCMA commissioner today, the senior commissioner of the CCMA, who tells me they're getting thousands and thousands of cases daily. It's they inundated. They cannot move. They don't have the budget to handle it, and they're completely bogged down. So much so that the majority of the cases, 75% of them, are dismissals. So just plain simple dismissal.
I'm not surprised to hear that. You know, as I'm remembering, you know, it's there's certain stipulations within the LRA which would lead to a dismissal. You know, there's certain instances in which an employee did not perform according to their contract. But generally, when a dismissal is activated, it's when a sort of a clause of the contract has been transgressed.
Well, yes and no. It often is where a clause is actually then implemented. In other words, this contract terminates after 3 months. That could be deemed to be a dismissal in itself, even though it's there written in black and white in front of you. That still can be deemed to be a dismissal. The other thing is, you might not have done nothing wrong. We just can't afford you anymore. That also becomes a dismissal. So you have lots of ways of terminating the contract, which might then be deemed at the end of the day to be illegal. And if it's deemed to be illegal, it might then reinstate the contract again when someone you don't want, or it might then land up with anything up to a year's salary. If it's discriminatory, it could be 2 years' salary. It's an expensive business, and it's time consuming. And invariably, when these things get complicated, you might want to go to a lawyer who's also going to charge you. It's not pleasant. And the whole idea is, I think we need to have a re-look at all the legislation and start deregulating. I know that NEDLAC, which is the debating chamber for the future legislation, is about to produce some suggestions of changes to the law. And I'm hoping, I haven't seen those changes yet, so I can't claim to know what it is, but I'm hoping that it'll uncouple a lot of the smaller employers. We're employing 10, 15 people. It'll uncouple them from a lot of these complications, because I think that's standing in the way of job creation. People are scared to enter into any contract. They'd rather have a machine or a computer or outsource the work than employ someone or even engage them as an independent contractor, because people are scared.
I think it's a pervasive issue where people see, especially in the corporate environment, where you've got your corporate identity, you've got your reputation on the line, and these things, you know, sort of performance issues come up every day in South Africa. We essentially are fighting a performance battle, which just seems to be a sociocultural phenomenon.
Well, productivity is the second worst in the world in terms of the statistics.
Yeah.
So we've got that problem as well, on top of all other problems.
Productivity is also as part of the areas of clauses for activating.
Could lead to dismissal.
Yeah. If you're not performing in your job, then depending on what you've agreed to, if you're not performing, then you can be asked to attend a disciplinary hearing. And there's a whole process there's a warning, and then you're asked to attend the hearing, and then after the hearing, another thing happens. Can you take us through that process?
Yes, you can. In fact, if anyone's interested, it's Schedule 8 to the Labour Relations Act. Yeah. Very simply written schedule to the Labour Relations Act. Get it online and have a look at it. For performance, it's not a disciplinary hearing, it's a performance hearing, and it should be structured in terms of first of all, a training as to what is required.
Yeah.
Second of all, a warning that you're not meeting or matching the expectations of the employer, then possibly further training and possibly a second warning. Mm. Then you would then take that person through possibly more training. So it's quite a complicated business if a person not performing in terms of expectation.
Yeah.
So if Michael Bagram has to produce 10 widgets a day and he's only producing 4, and he has promised that he's an expert widget maker before he got employed.
Right.
Well, then you've got to still go through that toil of going through that Schedule 8 of the Labor Relations Act, where you have to show that there was a process that process was fair and that I was given all the tools and the opportunity. It doesn't help, for instance, if you employ me as a car salesman and I have to sell 4 cars a week and I get in people who want to buy cars and you haven't got stock. Mm. Well, then you can't blame me. So I've got a defense. I said, well, I had buyers for Toyota cars and you never had any stock, so they've gone off to another dealer. That's very unfair on me.
Yes.
So you have to traverse all those problems and possibilities to, at the end of the day, show what took place was not only a process that was fair and understood, and also that it was actually the merit of the case was fine. In other words, I did have the stock and you didn't sell the cars and you've been out gallivanting all day and not actually speaking to the customers when they come onto the floor. So it's a process that you need to show. And every single dismissal, doesn't matter what it is, stands on 2 legs. The one is the how did you dismiss that person?
Yes, yes.
And the other one is the why did you dismiss them? Both of them must be deemed to be fair in our law. How and why? 2 legs, and then you must stand very firmly on those 2 legs. Because if you fall off the one leg, the whole body's going to collapse.
That's it. So just a word out to our listeners. If you, as I said, if you have any areas where perhaps you've been unfairly dismissed, or you've had some area where there's been a dispute perhaps in your relationship with your employer, you can get in touch with us on 061-895-1019. That's 061-895-1019. Send us a message and tell us exactly, how things have happened in your life and your job. If things didn't really go according to plan with regards to the employment relationship that you had with the employer, let us know about it. Perhaps we can help you. So, Michael, we're going to now just move into our next segment. So thank you so much for your time today. We'll certainly have you on again. And
thank you.
Be in touch. Thank you.